This is the Transportation Commission meeting of October 19, 2016. We'll start off with, I got a couple things. Carolyn Schroeder is here today representing the EPC. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
So, welcome.
Thanks.
To the committee. Also, I want to mention that we're going to have a vote for the vice chair at the end of the meeting. So I have one nomination for Stephen, and so everybody can think about. I sent everybody a letter. I hope everybody got it. That explaining the duties, but give it some thought, and then we'll have a vote at the end there. Okay, let's see. Minutes for September 21st. I sent you some minor.
Yeah, I already incorporated.
Did my career as a proofreader. You see, I'm a nitpicker there, but nothing big. But okay. Does anybody else have any inputs on the minutes for September? No. Have a motion to accept the minutes.
Motion to accept them as revised.
Second.
All right. It's all in favor of accepting?
Aye. Aye.
All right. Motion carried. Okay. Are you planning to leave early?
Cause no, because we're going to be done by 8:30.
Right?
No. There's issues about pedestrians and the crosswalk, the legality there. Wilson knows about it. I don't know if he brought it up to the rest of the... Okay, I just wanted to bring that up to you. But before you leave, if you have to leave earlier for some reason, just let me know and I'll run it by you. Just so we didn't have... I didn't have time to vet that issue in a letter. But anyway. Yes, you want to chime in on that one?
Yes, okay. If I could. So we did receive your note and a couple of other notes from other folks. Essentially, there was a legal issue where the city code was found to be not in compliance with the state code in terms of pedestrians and crosswalks. Mm-hmm. And so the city attorney is taking this up.
Right.
And we'll be working on this to I understand that this will be something they'll be working on this fall. So starting to bring the city code in line with the state code so that that particular law is enforced in the same way.
What's so we don't have an ordinance to update that.
Well, yeah. Okay, just not to drag it out, yeah. There's a lot of background information on there, but a lady was hit in a crosswalk, mm-hmm. and determined that the driver was not at fault because the way the judge read the city code is that he wasn't at fault because you didn't have yield to pedestrian sign there. Hmm. State code doesn't require a sign, and it shouldn't. But that's how the judge read it, so we need to clarify the city code. So that was the issue. The city attorney is working on it.
Sounds pretty straightforward.
Yeah. So I was actually going to get a resolution, but since it's moved that fast, so things are moving along there. Okay, so that's enough. That issue's taken care of. Okay, updates to receive. We've got six of them, so does anybody, do you have presentations on any of these? Or?
So if it's the pleasure of the commission, if you all want to let us know which ones you'd like us to update you on, I don't know if you want to go around and ask folks which one.
Well, for Carolyn's, what we do in the updates is if you do your homework and you read these and you have some questions on them, then all you have to say, I'd like an update on that. Okay. So we have six of them tonight, and I'd like to know who is there. Anybody want a discussion on the funding update? No. King Street Metro Station? No. Eisenhower Avenue Metro?
Yes.
Okay. Old Town North Small Area Plan.
I have a quick question. What's the timeline for wrapping up the transportation study?
For Old Town North?
Yes, sorry.
So probably about January, February.
January,
that's when we plan to go to the council for adoption. So we will be coming to the Transportation Commission prior to going to the Planning Commission to ask for your endorsement of the transportation plan.
Okay, thank you.
Make sure it's consistent with the city's master plan.
Is that it?
Yep,
on
just
that one?
Was yeah. Looking at a timeline.
Okay. I-95, 395 hot lanes?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, and then local motion, change of designation there. Okay, so we'll start with the Eisenhower Avenue, Metro Rail. Somebody have a question on that?
Do you have a question? Do you want to just clear it?
Just want an update? Okay.
All right. What's happening with that project is there was money set aside for the design work to improve the pedestrian plaza that's around the Eisenhower Metro Rail Station. That project has basically moved almost 100% through design. It's been in collaboration between the city, Hoffman, who owns a lot of the property around there, and WMATA. The thing that we're working on now is wrapping up the final comments that are on there, and we're just about 100%. The big challenge with this project is we can't move forward with it until some of the properties around the station actually start to redevelop, because the part of the infrastructure needed to build this has to be built by the third party, the developer, in order to tie it all cohesively together. So until that moves forward, we're kind of left with the plans. The idea is we're going to get the plans 100%, have them on the shelf ready to go, then whenever that development does move forward, we can pull them off and work with the developer to move forward towards implementing and building it.
Yeah, that was actually what I was wondering about. If there was any development in place and potential development or proposals in place. I mean, that's the most underutilized mm-hmm. station in the city, right? Sure, it would be nice to see it utilized more.
As far as I know now,
used to be Braddock Road, but
yeah. Oh, for development around there, as far as I know now, there's nothing really firm enough in place to actually trigger moving forward. I know there's been talk back and forth over the years about it, of something's about to happen and not. Mm-hmm. But as of right now, we're moving forward until we hear differently just with wrapping this up.
Okay. I did kind of have a further question about you're discussing that. I guess we're talking about the side of the street where the entrance is. There's yes. The parking lot in front of the Hoffman Center is being... It's all being built up right now, it appears. Does it look like any? Am I wrong about this?
Parking lot from which side of?
On the side of the Hoffman Center.
So where the National Science Foundation?
Where the Science Foundation is.
Yeah, and there's more around in the back of the building. I think there's something going on back there too, isn't there?
Yeah, there's the National Science Foundation, then there's the new apartment building, but other than that, I don't think there's anything else going on there. This plaza is the one that's directly below the existing entrance and exit and the bus loop that serves the station today.
And the developers for Eisenhower East are actually looking at redeveloping that whole area at Hoffman Town Center, and they're going through a smaller plan amendment process right now to look at rezoning or changing the land uses that were assumed in the 2003 plan. So.
And that's part of the longer range work plan that you all see that then goes to the Planning Commission and the Council, which program that particular small area plan in within it. And as that process is starting now, there's likely going to be the first kickoff meeting in November, a community meeting, so we'll make sure that the Commission has that information. We'll likely start to update you on that project as well, on your consent.
November 2nd.
Is it confirmed?
November 2nd.
Okay, it's confirmed. November 2nd. Where is it?
I know Nate would normally could answer this question, but how does a small area plan start? Does the developers come to the city and say, we're looking to develop around, we'd like to build around there, or does the city start it themselves wanting the developers to come in? I don't know where these
It's a great question.
Start.
I think it's a combination of both. I think that often the economic conditions, like Potomac Yard, North Potomac Yard Small Area Plan Amendment is a perfect example. I don't know if Brian's here. He's in the back, so I can see him. He serves on that group. That's a perfect example of where the city's CIP project for the Metro Rail Station is occurring, and that's also spurring that development. And at the same, so there's economic conditions sort of come to play with also the development coming forward. So it's usually a little bit of both. In some cases, though, we might find that a small area plan is quite dated, and it's time to update that, and that would be the initiative of the city.
An example of that would be like the Arlandria plan. That was more to try to induce or spur economic development.
Yeah.
And Beauregard was a result of five developers that were coming in at the same time that wanted to redevelop. So we had to do a SMARIA plan to kind of coordinate all
that. So sometimes it's the city, sometimes it's the, okay.
Right. And it usually goes, we have this longer range work plan that goes to the council every spring, and we also bring to you. And that sort of programs all of these into a time frame to let everyone know when we're going to be doing the different small area plan updates. And that's also the opportunity for the city council to say, look, we think this should happen sooner or we should happen later. So that's really the city council sets the policy for when that's done.
And for city staff to say, we can't do all the things at one time.
Oh, that never happens.
Right? Certainly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I guess that was it.
On 395.
395. Okay, that's right.
We had a presentation last month, and have they come back to us or provided any information on when their business model may be in a final state that they may be able to answer concrete questions? Because they weren't able to address any of that the last time, and I'm concerned about the pricing structure. It tends to be very elastic, and if their options are, if the price continues to be high in order to drive their revenue needs, it's going to cause, I think, some of the issues that Christine raised as far as, you know, potential users seeking alternate sources within the city, adding to congestion and reducing the quality of life. So I'm not sure if they got back to you with any more information.
I guess there are two kind of pieces to the financial picture that I'll do my best to address both of those. I think the one piece I know the commission was asking about was this toll revenue payment that we, you know, as a jurisdiction that's going to have this facility, we would like to see that go toward our transit projects. We will have to compete for that with all the other.
That $15 million that they
were paying? Exactly.
Plus, now it's been sort of augmented.
Yes, it that's the minimum, and it could go up, likely go up. So there's that piece that I think the commission was asking for some more clarification as to what that number is going to be going forward. Can it be higher? Those type of questions. And so we have put that forth, and we haven't gotten an answer in terms of what will the graduation rate of that funding source be. But that, because we're hearing that from the commission, we're hearing that from the community, the VDOT will be briefing the council next Tuesday on this project, so the council will be able to provide some questions and input on the process. And then staff will be taking all of that, both what we hear from the commission and the council, and providing comments to VDOT on their environmental assessment. But one of the comments I think we're hearing from all parties is, why is that payment at $15 million? Could it be higher? Could it, you know, be graduated as revenue starts to come in, as the vendor pays off the construction costs and gets the revenue? Can more of that go to the jurisdictions? So that's one comment. And I think the second part of your question, in terms of the toll pricing, they were hesitant to give us that information. I think they actually don't know the answer until the facility's in place, because what they tend to do is demand-based.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it depends on, you know.
Wait, but TBB and VDOT said today that they thought around January, maybe not very December, January, or January, that they'd have more definite about the deal. The letter they sent to us about the transit payment was, in addition to the $15 million, an annual inflation adjustment, and that's exactly how that will be calculated to be determined. In addition, a substantial portion of any excess revenues would also be dedicated to transit. So those are all pretty positive.
Because part of my concern is, what if they don't make their revenue projections, if they price themselves too high, or if for some reason they don't make them, what obligation do they have to, if they don't have the revenue, can they still provide any portion of the $15,000? And if not, is the municipality liable for any of the added costs to offset their operating losses?
I think their deal is structured.
15 is a promise.
That's
regardless of what their income stream is.
Yeah, we got that in writing from them. So that's the minimum, and as you described it, go up from there.
But, isn't that how they run the hot lanes, though, is by the amount of traffic? Now, I don't know what gauge they use.
Yeah, that's what
I don't know if it's to make the money, or do they want a certain amount of cars in there to relieve the congestion?
I mean, they're a for-profit entity. Like, they're TransUnion's trying to make money. They don't care about the congestion. They're here to make money.
Well, they need more cars in there to make money.
Yeah, they do the dynamic thing, but at the end of the day, they're going to make a profit line decision.
And it's going to be based on flow. because more vehicles you get through there, the more money they can potentially make.
And then there's a limit. If you up the price too much, then you have less.
Then you'll have fewer vehicles.
Yeah. And I'm sure that's an ongoing logarithm there because, you know, it changes with the traffic. So they're masters at getting the maximum amount of revenue for their investment.
Right.
Anyway.
So when we get more information, January, February timeframe, we will lay that to the commission
and
make sure you updated on that project.
Additional input. I think the jurisdictions along 395 have a lot of leverage because it's a basically, in a sense, it's a fait accompli. They said that the 95 South hot lanes have been hugely successful, whereas what was built on 495 isn't. And I've driven both. 495, it's very confusing, even to this day, for me to know when to get on, when to get off. You don't get on time, and then you're stuck in traffic, and you see these really open lanes, but there's no way to get over. He was really poorly designed, whereas here, you have set people who know where they need to go, which is into D.C. during commuting time, and they're coming through our streets on our express lanes. I mean, I think it's going to be a huge revenue. I think it'll be a huge revenue stream for them, and I think they're going to do very, very well. And I think we have leverage as a city to try and play hardball and to negotiate strongly to get the maximum revenue commitments up front. I think this will be highly, highly successful. Very similar to the success TransUnion has had on 95 South, which is what they said at our last meeting, right?
They said it was, yeah.
Yeah, successful. Where they had to refinance the 495 portion. But so I think we're similarly situated to what's been happening on 95 South. It's very clear, you know. So I think we have there's an opportunity here to maximize revenue.
I guess that would come in the contract that they signed. You know,
so
all that formula works
75
out.
75 years, is that right, Alan?
75 years total. We're 3 years into it, so once this is up and running, it's basically 72 years worth of revenue from that segment of 395.
And just so everyone on the commission is aware, that there is a public hearing on this item next Wednesday, and it's at 6:30 at Hammond Middle School.
And one more comment about it. You know, the HOV ramp at Seminary Road, and I reached out to some people with a couple suggestions, and I heard emphatically it should just always stay HOV. Is there any way that we can ensure that any agreement that's entered into agrees that this will always stay HOV?
So that's planning. That's one of our strongest comments to VDOT that we're planning to. And we'll be, we have to give them comments. We've heard that from the commission. We have a letter from council that outlined that back in 2010 when this was addressed, which I then forwarded to VDOT, I believe a couple months ago, to remind them that there was this arrangement. But that will be one of our comments to make sure that is retained.
In writing?
Yes, in writing.
And binding for as long as TransUnion?
Well, we'll provide the comment to VDOT, whether that, yeah. What their agreements with Transurban will have to obviously are joint with the city, but we'll provide the comments we got.
Just generally, and this may be an opinion thing, have you been able to sit down with them on their environmental assessment and their modeling, and how does staff feel so far about the ability of their modeling to really reflect potential future impacts on the neighborhoods? Because I know there's like this big study area, and then there's the corridor study area, and it's not clear to me. I'm no modeler, so sure. I don't know, but I'm wondering how staff feels about that.
So that's also a really good question. We have been coordinating with Arlington on this as our neighbors, and also both of our traffic engineers, both Arlington and ours, are combing through that document to make sure that the right practices are used and the right, you know, situations that we would look for in our traffic studies are used in this traffic study. The study area is actually surprisingly pretty focused on the corridor. I mean, they are I don't expect all of you to go and read the 93-page document, but they are not, they're looking at 55 intersections outside of the actual corridor, but most of those are really quite adjacent, they are adjacent to the corridor. In Arlington, it's Eads interchange. There's quite a bit of analysis there, and they're proposing some major adjustments to that interchange. But in terms of the methodology, so far we're comfortable with it. I think that we want to make sure, though, that we, as I mentioned, are providing a very long list of technical comments, which just, you know, reflect our thorough review. But we'll also have some high-level comments that will be more on the lines of what I described in terms of the transit payment, the HOV ramp. So there'll be a little bit of both. I think we're overall comfortable with what we're seeing so far. But yeah, we'll make sure that we are thorough when we look at it.
I want to go backwards because I actually do have a question.
Sure.
If that's okay with staff. On the funding update, specifically the WMATA Metro Rail maintenance stuff. So this has been obviously in the blogosphere, you know, a lot of people in the region are talking about the different options that WMATA is discussing for changing hours in order to address ongoing maintenance needs. And I guess I just wanted to hear a little bit of the city's position on these alternatives so far and how that's, like, how we're communicating with them about dissatisfaction perhaps with lower levels of service in the long run and preventing them from saying things like permanent, you know, reductions in service that we might never get back.
Well, I think we're still absorbing sort of their proposals, which I don't know, Alan, if they've released their public meeting schedule on that, or they...
Well, there's a couple different things going on. The public hearing for the change in Metro Rail service hours is actually tomorrow. It runs, I think, from 12:30 to like 10:30 at night. They're doing a lot of additional outreach at some of the stations with the highest ridership numbers, a lot of the core stations, a lot of their transfer stations, to try to, if flyers are handing out, we're getting our Go Alex team to get out there and hand them out to people, give you people an opportunity to comment, make sure they know that there's an opportunity to comment about it. What's going to happen is they're going to take all of the information they hear back from a staff at WMATA, is going to look at it and basically end up making a proposal to the board. The general manager will make a proposal to the WMATA board on what they think is the best option moving forward. There are four different options out there, varying from closing everything at midnight to staying open until 1 a.m. on one day and closing a little bit earlier on weekdays. You've probably seen most of them out there. So that's the process they're going to go through. So it's very much in the press, as you said. You hear a lot about what the impacts could be, what the ridership impacts could be, what it would do to the local economies, et cetera. NVTC, which Councilman Levine is on, sent a letter, I believe, after last month's commission meeting to WMATA, basically laying out some high-level concerns about how important Metro Rail service is to Northern Virginia. A similar letter was submitted by DC and Maryland as well. MVT staff is going to be taking a lot of comments they heard from the commission last month and from jurisdictions and writing another letter, kind of a little more down in the weeds and getting to some of, as more information comes from WMATA, kind of responding to some of those kind of more granular issues. The first letter is a little bit higher level. That's the process for it. We'll see what they end up proposing, and then everybody will basically be reacting to it. We don't really know anything more than what's out there. Blends a little bit into the whole issue with closing down rail stations during the day and shutting down transit service that's like low performing, depending on how you want to define that. That kind of feeds into the bigger picture of what next year's fiscal situation looks like for WMATA. On the operating side, they're looking at a $275 million gap. They've thrown some ideas out there, floated the trial balloons, everything from, like I said, shutting down metro stations with low ridership during the day, only opening during the peak, eliminating lots of different bus routes out there, cutting back hours, trimming back service. They have a whole plethora of information they put out at one of the last WMATA board meetings. it's a little bit of everything. I think it's kind of a wake-up call because there are some tough decisions going to have to be made by the region. They have proposed some very draconian ideas, and they've proposed a couple ideas that are a little more, probably a little more palatable for folks. Some of them are management improvements that WMATA can make and achieve savings. Some of them maybe they're going to consider a fare increase. They're basically saying they're leaving everything on the table. So they have to look at all possible options to try to come up with a way to fill that $275 million balance. One of the big ones that's the most impactful for the city is, are they going to come to the jurisdictions and ask for additional funding? So it's a little bit of everything right now. We'll be getting the draft operating budget, I believe, in November at the WMATA board meeting then, and the draft capital budget in December. So as soon as we get those, we'll have something much more solid to respond to, which feeds right into our budgeting process today.
Okay, makes sense. Really, nothing to do until we find out what their proposals are. Okay. Any other questions on the updates to receive? All right, commission updates. ATC board update.
I'd like to raise just one thing. I mentioned TPB talked a lot about Metro today and the CLRP, which we're going to approve next month. But one other thing that I raised was pet cause of mine is incident response. Half of all traffic congestion is caused by non-recurring incidents, accidents, disabled vehicles. And this region is a little behind other regions, and so we are going to have a traffic incident management conference on November 2nd at COG from 9 to 12, and we're going to have it's mostly for elected officials and city staff and interested citizens, and we're going to hear about the incident response plans that are currently in place in the region, and then have some people from other regions that are going to talk about what they're doing so we can see whether some other best practices, and then have a discussion about things that we can do to try to improve things. I'm especially hopeful that we can make some progress with the National Park Service on George Washington Parkway, for example. Mm-hmm. This is by having quicker and more efficient incident response, you not only clear traffic faster, but you also get to victims and injured people faster. And so there's a lot of and prevent secondary accidents from rubbernecking. So incident response, it's the most cost-effective way you can do traffic congestion relief. Welcome anybody who wants to participate. Look, see information on TPB's website, but it's November 2nd in the morning.
Yeah, if you could just put that out to everybody when that is. This is very much.
I'll send you the flyer.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like that step in the right direction for sure. Okay, the commission updates.
So the North Potomac Yard Advisory Group had its meeting number 8 last Monday, October 17th. And the focus of this meeting was sustainability and open space. Majority of the meeting, at least like the first half, was looking at the sustainability recommendations from the 2010 plan, and then there was a lot of debate about this one bullet about strive to achieve carbon neutrality by 2030, and we've kind of, you know, is that still, you know, is that date changed? What does carbon neutrality mean? How is that expressed and all that? And so there was a lot of debate about that. But since that plan was done in 2010, there's now been city environmental action plan. So, you know, one thing that I thought was said towards the end was maybe that supersedes the small area plan instead, and then you just say that, you know, it'll be in conformance with the city's plans for sustainability. And I think how this is implemented in practice is like LEED certifications for new buildings, you know, green roofs, stormwater retention, things of that nature. And you know, one thing at the last bullet from the 2010 plan was requiring a sustainability plan as part of the first DSUP to then. So the first thing that gets built there as part of the that phase one development will have to go through a rigorous environmental review, and I guess the idea there is that would then apply to subsequent developments in phase one, and then for the rest of Potomac Yard redevelopment. I made the point that, you know, if we optimize the Potomac Yard Metro Station as a multimodal hub with, you know, all the different modes possible, and that it's very convenient, and it's a place people want to go to and access the Metro Rail Station, that supports a low carbon lifestyle and the goals of sustainability and all that. And then the second part of the meeting was presenting the open space and sort of the excellent continuity that you'll have from the GW Parkway bike trail through the plans on 4 Mile Run to have access both on the Arlington side and the Alexandria side, and then through the Potomac Yard area, and then all the way through the Linear Park to Brightwick Road Metro. So you got a lot of east-west finger parks, they call them, you know, to connect like to Del Rey, Mount Vernon area. So it was really great to see all that.
Yeah, that's good. Anybody else? Silence. Okay. Multimodal transportation grants.
So tonight we're going to ask, typically with grants that we take to City Council, we go to the Transportation Commission first, such as RCPC, MAC, Smart Scale. So there's a couple grants that we want to talk about tonight and what we'd be using them for, and asking you to endorse these projects or for these grants prior to going to council. We're planning to go to council on October 25th because these grants are due on November 1st. The first one is the VDOT Alternatives Program grant, and so on that one, we're requesting $800,000 for the Holmes Run Trail connector on the south side of Holmes Run. This was a project that was in the Pedestrian Bicycle Master Plan. It was one of the three priority trail projects. Mm-hmm. And the second project is the this is for the VDOT Bicycle Pedestrian Safety Program, and this would be pedestrian safety improvements at Seminary Road at Howard. And this would be, we're asking $400,000 for this grant. Just so I think you're familiar, we brought the Pedestrian Bicycle Master Plan to you. This is the location that we're talking about for this grant. There's a, so today there's a trail on the north side, but on the south side, it's basically a dirt trail that's not very good for either pedestrians or bicyclists. It is within the resource protection area, so this trail will be designed as a pervious surface type of trail. But it's really on the south side between Ripley and Pickett Street, and it's really to provide that connection to that's missing there. And so again, we're asking $800,000. There is a 20% match required on this grant for this grant. And so the match would be $160,000, which we would be looking at $60,000 through in-kind services such as design, and then the other $100,000 using unused funds from FY16 of the Complete Streets program. And then this just gives you a little bit more detail of the location of the project. It's about almost half a mile long. And again, this was the number three priority trail project in the Pedestrian Bicycle Master Plan that was approved earlier this year. The second one, this is at the intersection of Howard and Seminary. So we've had a lot of accidents at this location. Since 2011, there have been about 26, collisions at this intersection. And so we feel that it's an important safety need. And this grant really does look at how to improve. This grant is geared towards improving safety for pedestrians and bicyclists. And so this was when we did the Pedestrian Bicycle Master Plan. This was within one of those six case study areas that we talked about.
Right.
The Seminary Road case study area that kind of goes all the way out to 395. And this is right near Inova Hospital. So it is an important location in terms of improving safety for people that are going to the school. There's the Hammond School is out in this area further to the west. I know, mm-hmm. Christine, you brought up a lot of issues about safety on Seminary Road. So we feel because of the previous or the amount of collisions that have happened out here, and because it isn't within one of our goals from the Ped Bike Master Plan was to start moving towards implementing these recommendations that were in these case study areas as well as the priority projects in the Ped Bike Plan. This project is the Holmes Run project was in our, that I talked about earlier, is in our Transportation Long Range Plan that you recently approved. This is also in our. This project is in our Transportation Master Plan because it's in the Ped Bike chapter that was approved. So in terms of the next steps, so we're asking again the Commission tonight to endorse these two projects, and we would ask for you to submit a letter that we could then attach to the application. The applications are due fairly soon, November 1st, so we actually are starting to work on those right now. We will be going to the council on October 25th and asking them to approve these as well. And then the award we'll know in the spring whether we receive it or not. It's competitive. Both of these are competitive awards, competitive grants that are funded. The first one I mentioned is funded through the FAST, the Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act, the current legislation, transportation funding legislation, federal legislation, and the other one's a VDOT project, so or a VDOT grant. So with that, and then once we, if we do win these two, either of these, we would implement these in 2018. Because the grant is tied to, that's when we get the funding.
Okay. Does anybody have any more questions about the grants?
I just have a couple comments.
Okay.
I have a question about the Holmes Run. What kind of material would be used?
Pervious surface. So basically, it would have to allow for rainwater, stormwater, rainwater to actually soak within. So that
what would that be?
The types of surface. I don't.
Essentially, I don't know if you've been to Dora Kelly, the Nature Center. There's a similar type of surface. It's typically recycled materials, like recycled tires or other plastic materials or rubber materials that are been recycled and then used on a trail. And they have small gaps in the actual surface so that water can filtrate through.
There's also one, I believe it's up at Orinoco Park. There's a similar type of surface there. And it actually, when you're walking on it, it actually so feels a lot. It's not so hard.
Yeah.
So it's actually better for runners. And so.
I think there's a section further south in the next park down as well.
And then the Seminary Road and Howard, that is also right near the hospital. And it's pretty much, after you come over 395, the 28A, the primary stop is right there, and then it turns on Howard and goes down Braddock. So you have the two bus stations, on either side of Seminary, and there's a lot of pedestrian traffic, not in the crosswalks. So anything to just access, you know, people coming to and from the hospital. So any you know, it's an accident waiting to happen, a pedestrian accident waiting to happen. So anything that can be done to improve that intersection, in addition to minimizing crashes that are occurring between vehicles, is a good thing.
Yeah, hopefully we get the grants. If we don't, then basically any funding like that would have to come out of the city's coffer, and then we'll have to see what our ranking on our non-funded list is. But as far as the grants to apply for them, it's like free money, so hopefully we can.
Except for all the effort it takes to write the grants.
Well, yeah, that's where it comes.
But
in.
It's worth it. It's worth it if you get it.
Should nothing gained.
Right.
A good grant writer, that pays off. So, any more questions on the two proposals for the grants? I'll need a motion to approve a letter going to council endorsing them.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any nays? Approved? Okay. So I'll be out of town, but just fire it to me and you can stamp
we'll have
my.
Patrick will hopefully.
You can put my. Signature on there. Send it to me, and we'll go from there.
Well, if I may, I'm going to just go over briefly the budget process for those that might be new to this process. I won't spend a lot of time, but I want to make sure everybody's oriented. And then before I go into that, just kind of let the commission know about how the commission fits into the overall budget process. So this is the time of year where we come to the commission to get, and I might stand over. This is the time of year where we come to you to get budget guidance, which we then give to the city manager, the director of the department as well, so that can be factored into the development of the city manager's budget. And so tonight's the opportunity, I want to kind of give you some financial forecasting, some trends that we're seeing as we develop this next year's budget. I also want to go over the budget schedule. More specifically, this one thing that we're doing a little bit differently this year, which I think is a good idea, is the city manager has posed two questions which were in the docket for tonight's agenda. that he would like the commission to consider and to weigh and have some discussion on tonight. And the outcome of that discussion would ultimately, we would provide a letter likely from the commission to the Director of Transportation that provides your answers to those questions or your input to those questions. And the director's asking for that, or the city manager's asking for the director to receive that by the end of this month. So in addition to that, there's going to be a meeting that our director is holding with all the chairs of the boards and commissions, and that's actually next week. And so
Monday,
yeah. So
whoever ends up being the vice chair is also coming with me.
That's the opening on Monday.
Yeah, sign you up. So the information that we talk about tonight, too, can also be transferred in that form. Just to kind of get us started, to give you a brief overview, I think it is helpful. And particularly, I'm going to focus on transportation, but I'm going to kind of try to give the commission a full picture. The city's budget has three main areas. It has the operating budget, it has the capital improvement program, and then thirdly, there's a financial forecasting model that that we do as part of the budget process. That's a five-year financial planning tool that we have. So the operating budget, which tonight we're going to probably spend a little bit more time talking about this, because the input we're looking for from you is about the section of this budget that deals with the general fund. So that's the funds that are not grants. Those are the funds that are coming directly from the city and paying for transportation programs. There's some on the capital side, and then there's quite a few on the operating side that are funded through the general fund. And in the case of the operating budget, this is last year's approved operating budget. You can see the majority of the budget is 80% of it is funded through the general fund. And then you'll often hear, if you're involved with the budget process, what we call focus areas, and that's where we're dividing up the operating budget into these different areas of the city. And the one that is applicable to transportation is the livable, bottom left-hand corner there, the livable, green, and prospering city. Under that, you'll find transportation. You'll also find planning and zoning and other essential functions within that, within the focus area. So don't be surprised if we talk about livable, green, prospering city. That's our way of, another way of saying transportation. So going to how expenditures are divided up within that general fund, this shows you that over the half of the budget is for schools and safety, and about 12% is the livable green, and you can kind of, you see that over on the right, it's the green portion there. So what we're talking about tonight, when we're talking about those two questions, we would need to keep in mind that, you know, any priorities that we make are this sort of slice of the general fund, this 12%. So of that slice that we just looked at, what goes into that? What part of the general fund goes toward transportation? So transit subsidies is a huge portion of that. The general fund funds, for instance, last year at $11 million for DASH. For the trolley, the general, and this is not the total cost of these services, it's just what the general fund funds. The trolley is at $992,000. WMATA is $6.3 million. Sorry, I don't have these written on the slide, but I looked these up before I came. BRE is $147,000. Paratransit is $1.3 million. And essentially, I've listed these in the order of magnitude in terms of cost, for the most part. Street resurfacing is $3.3 million. Complete streets, $1.5 million. And then bridge repair and signals and traffic signal maintenance. Traffic signal maintenance is around $700,000, and bridge repair is $850,000. So we just talked about the operating side. The capital side is a bit of a different story for transportation. You can see that sort of gray section of the pie. And that's the transportation section of the capital budget. So that's 28% of the CIP is dedicated towards transportation. That includes a big chunk of that is the Potomac Yard Metro, and also WMATA. But as you can see, it is the capital side of the budget is pretty focused on transportation. Schools has around 16% of that, and sewers is 9%.
What was Potomac Yard in that pie? What did that mean exactly?
So Potomac Yard is, the budget's $268 million, I believe.
Roughly, yes.
So that is a pretty substantial portion of the overall city budget. So it's reflected in that pie there. So the total budget's $1.6 billion, but of that, $268 million is the metro station.
Okay, so where Potomac Yard separated from transportation is still transportation.
Yes. Sorry, okay. I should have said the colors are.
Oh, it's okay. Okay, great.
Gray and also, I don't know what you would call that. Not a very.
You got it.
It's a fall foliage color.
Very well.
Rotten leaves.
Yeah.
Spicy mustard.
Spicy mustard.
That's a more positive. Okay. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but essentially, in summary, it's showing.
Let's not, because it's really depressing.
It is depressing. Yes. So I will let you see the graphic, but I will summarize it in some other slides after this. But essentially, there's some budget pressures. I think we are all aware. School enrollment is up in Alexandria. We have capital needs in terms of building new schools, metro rail, metro bus expenditures. And I'm going to go into detail on some of those numbers in a second. Streets and buildings and just in general state of good repair. The stormwater management. So we have a stormwater management fee that we've proposed, and probably people have seen that in the news. And that's something to treat those areas that are affected by pervious surfaces or impervious surfaces. And then lastly, just other service demands that are ongoing with the city. State of good repair is particularly important for transportation. So of our 560 lane miles, we have a lot of resurfacing needs. One thing I want to make sure to point out to the commission is that VDOT used to subsidize quite a bit of our street resurfacing, and that's something that they're not going to be doing going forward. The state also has their own financial considerations, and one of the areas that they are cutting is the street resurfacing payment that was provided to jurisdictions. So we're seeing a big reduction in that this upcoming year, so that's something that we're trying to plan for, particularly as we have repairs that are needed. In terms of Metro, I think Alan highlighted this earlier, so I won't go into great detail, but it's not a pretty picture. We're potentially $275 million gap in fiscal year 2018. We're still waiting for WMATA's proposed budget, but this could be an impact of roughly $2 to $6 million for Alexander for this upcoming year. And then obviously that we have the closure issue that we have gone over. On the capital side, we have a capital funding agreement with WMATA. All the jurisdictions that participate in WMATA have this agreement. We're currently in the negotiations for the new agreement, but that hasn't been finalized yet, and that would specify the payment that we need to make. But right now,
when was the old one? What's
so the old one expired, and we just renewed it for
was
one.
Was it like 5 year?
Well, the old one, I believe, was six.
The old one was six.
Yeah.
6 year? Okay.
Currently in a
so
1 year.
So the new one would probably be six.
That was the goal, but we extended for one more year just this past spring. Council extended
for one
more year. But what we'd like to get is more of a 6 year, so we can better plan the finances for those that period of time.
Okay.
I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Alan, but
it's a scary story.
Okay.
So, as all these numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to get to the questions in just a minute, but just so everybody's familiar with the schedule. The first public meeting on the budget process was last Thursday. There'll be on Monday a meeting also with the boards and commission chairs. The council will have a retreat on November 5th. And then city council guidance on November 9th. That will be through the city council regular meeting. And then City Hall proposed, February 21st date is when the city manager will propose his budget. So within this time frame, we'll be coming to you periodically every month and getting sort of input from the commission at each stage of the process. After the budget's presented in February, then there'll be a series of public meetings. There'll be budget work sessions as well, and then an add-delete period where city council can add or take out aspects of the proposed budget, and then they'll adopt the budget on May 4th. So the two questions for discussion that we wanted to go over tonight were essentially, what are the high priority services initiatives within transportation, in this case, that the commission feels that we should be adding or increasing in the upcoming budget? So that's the first, the increase side, or adding. And then secondly, if the area of, if this area of the budget is required to identify reductions, what are the lowest priority services and initiatives that should be considered? And I think for the context, it's helpful to see what the commission prioritized last year, which I included in your docket, but I can briefly go over those items as well, just so the commission's familiar. I don't know if those at the back of this presentation, but
it's in the
document. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know if I want to read all of them to you, but I think that it's important to understand that the commission felt very strongly that the 2.2 cent transportation reservation was preserved. That was the top, one of the top priorities. And that essentially, you know, when we have to look at reductions, that we look at capitalizing staff positions versus removal of staff positions, maintaining high funding for the, or funding for the highest priorities, and then there are certain grant funding sources that lend themselves better to like non-motorized projects than others that have less restrictions. So things like CMAQ and RSTP funding sources for non-motorized and maintenance. So those were some of the things. I think enforcement was also a key element that we heard last year, making sure that enforcement is well funded. And that we don't, that we look for other sources to pay for WMATA outside of the city's TIF. That was another big message that we got from the Transportation Commission last year. So with that, I will open up discussion. I think the goal of this is to get some feedback from you that we could then incorporate into a letter that would go to the...
Well, that, yeah, that too, and yeah, and then I have some feedback from the commission, mm-hmm, on their feelings on addressing the two questions. Now, as you see, and as Kerry mentioned, the 2.2%, you know, tax, we were adamant on that's our number one priority, that money should be retained for CIP funding. Now, WMATA comes in with a bill higher, and the city finds it easy to go in and take some of that money. So that I think should remain our top priority, because that's city council can, you know, go ahead and use it, but we have to let them know that that's very important. We've got, you know, $80 million in projects that are sitting there, and each year we have maybe $1 million to do them, and that list keeps growing, and you can't accomplish these without any money. So my suggestion is just to leave that 2.2% as making sure that the it's retained for CIP, the CIP budget, unless somebody else, that would be my number one, and that probably would make it the only one, because that is such a, it's a big issue, and it's can be we're talking millions of dollars in WMATA funding that they may want to take. So that's where I stand. Is a discussion on that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I have to concur with you on that. We've taken a hit on the TIF in the past, and I'd prefer not that to happen again, since we have a lot of work to do, and it's hard to get it done under these circumstances.
Anybody else? Again, you know, it's not the commission's proposal, but anything that WMATA can do to try to get the federal government to help fund Metro would help. We're in a unique position. We got two states in the district, and they have a hard time agreeing, and if you have a single source of money coming to federal government, that would make it a lot easier. And since a lot of federal employees are using Metro as that chair. But Tim knows that pitch every year that we go back and make that. And that basically is the pitches are made by our representatives that go to Congress, but the rest of Congress cares less about Washington.
But Vermont sometimes gets special treatment in the federal budget because of that.
Whatever they can do would help, because otherwise the bill comes right to us, right? So, and one of their proposals is, you know, besides upping fares, reducing that, is to send in a bigger bill to the jurisdictions, which we certainly don't want there. So, okay, so we'll make that our top priority as far as initiatives there, since that's a big one, that's important. As far as the budget goes, you know, potential reductions, you know, there's a lot of ways you can cut this. I was in the budget business for like 34 years, and I played these games of how you put your golden programs up there to be cut, and we can't cut those, it's too important. But it's hard, because, you know, if you cut maintenance, I mean, that's what happened to Metro. You know, they didn't put any money on maintenance, and look at them now. It's a major problem. So if we cut back maintenance, you know, you're going to run into problems there. There may be areas that cut maintenance. You know, one of the things I was thinking about, what can you cut that it really wouldn't be noticeable for a while? It's just like the paving schedule. I mean, we went for years with shortfalls on that one, and then finally it almost doubled about 2-3 years ago. And, you know, they're paving roads like mad. That's good. But, you know, if we cut that budget, people wouldn't complain right away. But as the streets deteriorated, then you get back in the same cycle that we did before. And it's like, okay. And if you ask them, say, oh, we could raise taxes. Nobody wants to do that, especially the council, because that's a bad thing to suggest. So it's tough when you say, hey, okay, what are you going to what are you going to put up there? So, okay, discussion.
I have some questions. And so a question about the paving schedule and the complete streets work. My understanding is that those two things are actually pretty interrelated, because when a road is going for resurfacing, that's when we implement a particular project there. So I would be reticent to just say, you know, pause the paving schedule for 2 years or however long while we reassess and save money and whatnot, because it will just not be recouped, and it and the complete streets work will suffer, because we're really using it as the scheduling discipline to make sure we're moving slowly through improvements that have to be made across the city.
I agree with you. I just use that as an example.
Right. And so that's just,
you know, you could take bridges, the same thing. Okay, let's let the maintenance go, but there's almost a point of economic return where the cost of repairing it,
right,
you know, you have to redo the whole bridge, like the Memorial Bridge.
Whether it's the transportation program investments or the wider budget considerations you all are making now, I personally think that maintenance of everything is the most important thing. More important than expansion, more important than new service, and I think the stormwater combined sewer issues that we have today, DC has handled recently major investment decisions to deal with things that just haven't been maintained, haven't been updated, and Old Town is old, and we haven't necessarily kept up with that either, and those costs do escalate the longer you wait. So while it's really hard to make choices, it's hard when you have to make choices and you want everything, but I guess I'm of the opinion that you can't not maintain the things that we have. So it might be that you can't add things that we want, but we should be front-loading as much as we can bear, as we can get the community to bear, whether it requires, I mean, I've been told that money is cheap right now because we have such a good credit rating. So I don't know if that's a way to say, like, now or never in terms of taking risks and being willing as a community to front load some costs in order to come up to speed with back maintenance on several different areas. And those could be transportation areas, but they also could be these other areas that we've talked about. And so that's, I guess, my soapbox. I think it's really important to catch up with what we've gotten behind on and to never get behind again and to keep that a priority.
Now, the state of good repair is essential, I would agree with that. And the point of low-cost money, I mean, interest rates are at a historical low. With our credit rating, we do have opportunities to try to maximize the use of that. And bridge repairs or maintenance should not be deferred. The sewer example, I think, was another perfect one where the investment needs to be made now or to pay dearly going forward with each deferred maintenance decision that you make.
Yeah.
So I think that's a critical item for us to advance.
Yeah, good question she brought up there. Mm-hmm. Would there be a type of loan that the city could get for transportation issues, repairs, et cetera?
I guess what specifically?
Well, long term, the city borrows money to
bonding.
Yeah, but I don't know if how.
So we got Metro has really
a good example.
Stretched us.
Well, there's a point where you start getting to the point if you endanger your AAA rating, which we have as the highest rating, and I think that's a place the council doesn't want to get too close to, but and I'm sure right now you're probably there, right?
Well, we tell everybody that. I think we are there or very close, like Tim said, due to Metro.
Yeah.
We've extended ourselves in that instance until we start to see some returns from that in terms of the development in that area and the revenues and whatnot. I think it's going to be very tough to make a fiscally sound financial case to extend more borrowing for the city, especially when it's not, I mean, it'll be a capital improvements project, but I mean, it's got to be one to the same threshold as Metro in terms of return on investment.
Just wanted to feel you out.
Yeah,
and I was thinking that we're probably close to the place we don't want to exceed.
So we're right at our
some targets.
Our target.
Okay. And we're right there. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that all came into play when you're trying to figure out how much money you could afford for the Metro station and how much help you can get from the state and the feds and such, which we've done a pretty good job on that. So. The other thing is, does the city have the authorization to impose an additional gas tax to pay for transportation? I mean, I don't know about other jurisdictions.
Gas taxes are the state.
State?
Yeah. It's a state level.
Do they have additional gas tax within the metropolitan area to pay for Metro? I've heard that, but I've never been able to.
Gas tax is levied
at a state level.
Yeah,
unless DC does it, but DC's also a state.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Or is categorized as a state.
I heard that. I never did my research on that, but so that we can never make that an issue. Okay, so much for those ideas.
I have a question. What are hotel taxes in Alexandria like, especially compared with our neighbors?
We're very competitive, I know that much, but I think we're one of the top three in the region, I want to say.
Okay.
And we use an interesting, it's a set amount per night as well as a certain percentage on the overall bill as well. So it's an interesting mix where most localities are either a certain amount every night or a certain percentage of the overall bill. We do a little bit of both, so it kind of wavers. If you stay one night, we're very competitive. If you stay for much longer, I think we're up there, probably the top two, the highest.
And so it's
competitive there also. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there have to be. And there have been some assurances.
We're competitive with DC, and I think PG is going to go up with casino moving across the river. So we'll remain competitive throughout the budget cycle.
And there's some assurances given to the hotels and everything that there's money, how the money would be spent.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's going to make it people come here to enjoy our transportation systems.
Yeah, did you? Did that answer? Yeah, that was fine. I was just wondering if that was a place more revenue could be gathered. As well.
Sure, but I think you can say yes, but you just have to weigh what the pros and cons of that are. And if you detract from the amount of tourists actually and people actually staying in hotels, I think that's the key. And then, you know, the conversations we've had with the hotel industry about what we do with the money and how we what we fund, I think that would be part of that conversation as well.
Well, the same thing goes with food tax, right, too. You have to be competitive there with the other jurisdictions.
Yeah, I mean, we all see what's going on in Fairfax as a kind of case study about new taxes being put out. It's a big conversation.
Yeah, somebody's considering upping that. Is that Fairfax. Was Fairfax?
4%.
Yeah.
4%.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 4%.
Food tax, yeah.
That's hefty. Well, maybe we'll get some of their business.
Well, they're broke, so
you never know how that works. Okay, any other ideas of things we can?
I've got a sort of fundamental question that mostly betrays my ignorance at using these fundamental terms here. We have a list here of items for recommended continued inclusion in a 10-year CIP, but the questions up here talk more broadly about budget, and I understand correctly that the CIP is part of the larger budget, which includes an operating budget. Are we supposed to be providing any guidance on the operating budget, or are we just focusing on the CIP?
So it's a good question, Commissioner Brown. It's both, because what we're considering is general fund. This is specific. I know it doesn't say general fund in here, but when you look over the city manager's memo, it discusses the general fund. So what portion of the general fund is going to both transportation capital improvements as well as transportation operating? But you'll see very small, like when we go back to the slide, let me take you back to that slide that has you'll see that the majority of general fund dollars are going to transit subsidies, and street resurfacing is also a fairly substantial amount, but a lot of capital improvement projects are funded through grants. So to answer your question, the questions that we're looking at tonight are specific to what the city is spending on both capital and operating transportation.
So here's my follow-up ignorant question. Is it always clear-cut which is capital and which is operating? For example, looking at this list here,
right.
I see capitalizing staff positions. My instinctual reaction is a staff salary is an operating expense, but now what this is saying to me is that you're making it a capital expense. And if that's so, I don't understand what's going on. I don't understand the dynamics here. Is that happening because it's easier to get the money if we capitalize the operating expense? Is that what's going on here?
Yeah.
I mean, that has been a tool that has been used. I think that particularly the way it's been used in transportation over the last couple of years is, for instance, one example would be the Complete Streets program. That's one of our expenses here. It's $1.5 million in this fiscal year, and that contains two positions within it. So those positions used to be funded out of the operating budget.
And I think that this is something that the commission had recommended over the last couple of years, capitalizing positions that were directly tied to capital improvements. So the Complete Streets program is responsible for capital improvements such as bike facilities, pet those. So they wanted to tie those positions that are responsible for that back to
the It's a little like calling carried interest, not income.
But then the problem with that is, so you see $1.5 million for complete streets, you say, okay, not bad, but then how much are they being paid, and you know, what is the net really that's being applied to complete streets? So I know I made
it's about 1.2 out of that 1.5 million. It was about 1.25 million is actually going towards projects, and about 250,000 towards positions.
And when we resurface the whole street, that's an operating expense.
That is actually it's street resurfacing is a capital cost. It's a little bit unusual, I know, because it sounds like it will be operating, but it's new pavement or new asphalt, and often we're putting in some new curb work and new sidewalks. So it's in our capital budget.
Potholes are operating.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, there's certain parts of maintenance that are in operating. So. But the street resurfacing, which $3.3 million is this year, so that kind of gives you a sense of...
Glad I don't have to make those calls.
Well, I think one of the challenges is that we can ask all day for grants for capital projects and be like, oh, we got this great amount of money to go build something new, but we don't have the money to staff the project. And so that's where it really became natural to try to find ways where if it qualifies for capital funding, get the staff paid for that way, and then you don't have to take them off other things that are needed.
Yeah, which brings up a point. So so we don't have anybody designated to do just grants, do we? You kind of spread that out, don't you?
Well, that, actually, we do have a staff person that's working.
Just grant specific, and they're funded how?
They're funding through the operating budget.
Yeah.
Because they work on that individual works on grants throughout the department.
That might be one of the things I look at, and I've expressed in the past, is that I think it's very important to have, you know, somebody that, you know, that we have the ability to apply for all the grants that are available, because that's money that you can get that doesn't come out of the general fund, and you've assured me that, you know, you pretty much knew that, but I know in talking to Hillary that, she says, yeah, we just go after the bigger ones because it has a better payoff, you know, the ones for $2,000 or $3,000 or five, it's not worth the time to fill them out. And
there's a lot of paperwork.
A lot of paperwork, you know, and if you're going to do paperwork, let's do one for, you know, $50K rather than five. But still, you know, I'd hate to see the city not be able to apply for grants that we had, you know, a chance to because, a shortfall in the staff. So keep me posted. You know, if that.
Well, we have a pretty close eye on it, and that's you'll see, like, what we brought before you tonight, and then next month we'll bring the CMAQ RSVP. The smart scale came due,
right,
in September at $45 million. So that's like a very large priority for us is the grant applications.
Which, yeah, should be. discussion?
Yes.
Again?
I know I recall this list from last year, and I agree with you, Steve, with continuing to impose the 2.2 cent transportation reservation for transportation needs is important. And then I'm not sure if this was added last year, but I believe it might have been, recognizing the last bullet, recognizing regional transportation, including WMATA transit service as a priority. I mean, that's basically what we've been saying consistently, that WMATA funding should not come out of that 2.2 transportation cost. I'd like to see if maybe that bullet could be a little punchier. Seems to be a little vague and wishy-washy, to make that clearer. I assume that HOV violations on the Seminary Road ramp, that's a state enforcement obligation, right? That would not be City of Alexandria. And then I did try and do that. What are the highest priorities and what are the lowest? And you know, I can't come up with anything.
It's tough.
On the low end.
The highest one, pretty easy, but the lowest one, I struggle with that too.
Yeah.
You can come up with a lot of examples. Yeah.
It's maybe something where a council member should not pick in, but one approach could be you set aside high priorities like maintenance and metro and then say spread the pain for everything else.
Okay, so
that's
here,
another budget trick that I've learned.
I have three high priorities. Enforcement, the complete streets, and transit as the three high. And then thinking further, enforcement, if it was truly effective, would be for a while net neutral. Mm-hmm. If it was effective, until the point that it was so effective that the deterrent effect would end up not having it pay for itself. But I think we're very, very far from that. So enforcement, to the effect that, you know, we properly fund police officers to be out enforcing the laws. I know just the citizen perspective, you know, from all over, all areas of the city, there's complaints about traffic, particularly cars, you know, being too aggressive, overloading our streets, not obeying our laws, not considering pedestrians or other people who use streets. And enforcement, you know, they're not up there to raise money, but if they are enforcing the laws, a result of that is ticketing, which is used to deter it. And to a certain extent, that's something that could be net neutral. And then I was complete streets paving, I think it's just a really important service to the citizens. That overall promotes multimodal use, and that transit, because of our city streetscape is so overloaded with cars now, and people are frantically trying to get through, and NSF is coming in, and you know, as Eisenhower develops more and more, and as MGM opens, you know, we're going to see more and more cut through traffic, and you know, how do we get people out of cars and onto transit, I think is a ongoing theme. And the more we can make buses sexy, you know, and more efficient, I think the better chance we have of getting people to use alternative modes of transportation. So I see that as a high priority as well.
James?
So I just want to add on kind of on the complete streets and then kind of pick up on what Melissa was saying with maintenance. I think one thing that's important for us to note is that the last budget we got had the 18-month timeline for sidewalk repairs. And all of these things are really intrinsic, and I think that we need to be, as we kind of go through that process, I just wanted to highlight that we're looking at an 18-month timeline for sidewalk repairs. So I think that that's one of the things we should note, maybe not in this letter, but moving forward, note that that should be a priority for us as well, is you can't get people into transit if they can't get to the transit station.
Yeah.
Okay, so initially I indicated that our number one, our only priority was the 2.2% tax going directly just to CIP rather than be touched mm-hmm. by WMATA. Now, if we want to add anything on to that, you know, we have several suggestions, but do we, you know, my point is, do we want to have two or three priorities or just leave it at one?
My recommendation would be let's leave it at one if that's the thing. And I think that getting that 2.2 reservation helps us start answering some of the larger problems we've discussed. If that that gets us to the point. And I think that if that's the strongest piece and we lead with that and we get it, it's easier for us to maintain it moving forward too. Yeah.
So on the other end, as Tim suggested, and basically I've worked at, as we could say, if there are any lower priority items, you know, we don't really have any. We feel they're all important, and that if there was a reduction, that we would take that percentage across the board. Now,
That's one way to do it. And then, you know, people could complain of, oh, you can't do this, you can't. But, you know, nobody here came up with anything that says, yeah, that's not as important as the other thing. Is they're all pretty important, you know. You know, because if you know, street resurfacing, yeah, that you can go down the list and there's not much there. You know, bridge repair, well, that's kind of a scary thing. You leave that go, how long does that go until you have a real problem there? So, you know, that's one way to do it. Is take a percentage.
Clarification. So are you saying that in this the memo where we had the letter, I guess we recommended the initial policy guidance and we had the whole list of bullets, are you saying take all those bullets away and just have the one, which is
the, no, they just the highest priority. I just said our highest priority is the 2.2, and that's it.
Keep everything.
Yeah, the letter would, I kind of redid the letter as a draft. I haven't done it yet. I just kind of shifted some of that stuff, but it would basically stay the same, and you'll see it before it goes out. But that'll be next month. I just didn't have time to vet it. But as far as the lower priorities, then, you know, my suggestion is one way to do that is we don't have any lowest priorities. So if there's a reduction, we'll take it across the board, which really wouldn't affect the 2.2% because that's a different issue.
So I guess a question. The example here, which sounds like it's the basis of your draft letter, is policy guidance to City Council for the CIP. But getting back to Dave's question, and I think maybe others, this, we're talking about questions from Mark Finks, that
letter, yeah,
are not specifically just about the CIP. And so while I agree that the top priority can continue to be for us that we preserve a 2.2 cent transportation reservation so we can do the things that we want to do in the TIP,
I see.
Are we really getting him is that enough guidance to explain? Because it's not clear to me what is paid for with that 2.2 versus what
that's capital
other, because you're talking about general fund.
I am.
And general fund is not the 2.2, right?
Or, so this is a great question, a great discussion. I think it's important for me to clarify. So there's sort of two things at play. One is just overall guidance, which I think the 2.2 is what the commission really wants to make sure that the city manager and the council understand, the 2.2 to preserve that. So that's
right.
Like the overall guidance. And then there are these specific questions, which are more about the general fund.
Right.
And these are the items here on this list that the general fund, the city's general fund goes toward in transportation.
Right.
So.
And so it's
your
like.
Your letter could be two parts.
In this list.
Yeah.
And in some of the themes that we've discussed, like the idea of a focus on maintenance, would be if you're looking at investments of general fund revenue in areas of transit subsidies, street resurfacing, complete streets, signs, traffic signal maintenance, bridge repair, it would be like, we want you to make sure that we continue to fund maintenance in state of good repair for things. And with, I guess, something to question to carry out to the group is, does that include maintenance of service levels in all of our transit systems? Do we want to protect existing service levels and not actually have any cuts to those services, but potentially not have any expansions to those services? Is that something that we want to give as guidance? So making sure that we target our guidance to what they're actually looking at general fund monies that have to go toward.
Well, if you okay, so if we left the part in there about the 2.2, that would basically cover the capital end of it, and then basically have a second one saying that we feel that keeping the state of good repair and all the infrastructure, which would cover this four on there, is a high priority, which basically then puts it. Then you'd say, okay, so what do you want to take off the table? You know, is the next question down there, and you would say, well, we
you know, if you want to take something off the table, basically you take it out of the capital budget then, rather than taking it out of the, you know, it's kind of a, see what I'm saying?
Well, can $30 be shifted? No, there's
separate things.
There's very limited opportunities to do that. So generally we try to say no. So if at all possible, let's look at those two things as two separate
things. Yeah. Well, I tried.
we try to look at it.
Yeah. Our payments to say we are.
Sorry. Just kind of pondering this a little further, and if I were to sit there and answer the second question, so where would I cut? I'd probably cut the trolley.
Well, I was going to say, VRE payments are also...
That's number two on that.
At some point, there's a policy decision that the city made that was going to be a service provided to the public. Is that a true policy decision, or is there flexibility in trying to offset the operating expenses? Because, again, from my dad's perspective, there is no revenue source from that. There's a large number of passengers carried. You could even argue the point where certain routes are losing their ridership base because people are opting to take the free trolley. But are the VRE costs specifically to a particular amount or number of riders that exited any of the Alexandria stations? And then is the trolley?
Formulaic.
So that's pretty much
like
one model. Okay. But again, I would agree. Is there an opportunity to offset operating expense with the trolley by charging a minimal fee of, say, a dollar?
I was just going to ask you that. What would that bring in?
The calculations have always been, and the belief has always been, that the trolley pays for itself, and that if you start charging a fare, ridership goes down, and you're losing. You really are losing.
But is that true?
I don't think there's any hard economic.
How many tourists use it versus Alexandria's? Alexandria.
It's actually a pretty decent mix.
So 50-50 maybe?
At least.
What you find for Alexandria, you have folks that work in restaurants and usually service employees that will hop on it and take it up to the metro or what have you after a shift. So it is, it's been found to be beneficial for that group of.
It is a high percentage of non-tourists that are utilized.
So they do utilize it. I mean, I remember about 2 years ago we had calls from the restaurant industry to see if we can. And hotel industry to see if we could have it earlier to take more advantage of employees trying to get to work and whatnot as a route. To your early question, it's mostly paid by the hotel tax, so correct. I don't think it's 100%. I think it's more like 90 now. But usually when we first started the trolley, it was tied to an increase in the hotel tax, so there's a good portion of that.
So that's kind of the...
So, you know, if one of the thoughts I remember last year, it's a fleeting thought because I don't think it caught on, but one of the things that you can do is the hotel tax to take care of all the trolley. But that's part of the conversation.
Pushback on that, too. Well, another thing I thought of, and it probably wouldn't work for the locals, but you could have a box there and say, there's a little sign say donation, a dollar, and then in small words, donation. I mean, a tourist, you know.
I think the problem is you can't budget that.
Right.
That's true.
If you know, you get to a point of no return.
Yes.
So the thing about the free trolley is that it's great that it provides a service to retail employees in that corridor. But the flip side of that is retailers can also provide pre-tax transit benefits that don't cost them anything to their employees if they wish to do that. And that's what organizations like Go Alex, get this, are designed to promote. And so the retailers and the employees get an out for access to a federal tax benefit because they're not incentivized because we are subsidizing a service that actually costs us money to provide. And so we're not getting a tax benefit by spending our tax income on providing the service, but what they could be doing if we charged money for it is pulling that money pre-tax from their income and allocating it to their public transportation, which is a normal commute thing that most people do, or I should say many employers do. It's just less common in the service industry. And so I'm just throwing it out there. I don't think that this is going to be the silver bullet that's going to help City Council with their budget challenges this year. Probably. But I think that big picture question of whether or not a public transportation service should be free or not, really, I mean, there are psychological aspects to that. Like, do you value something that's free as much as you value something that you pay even a little bit for? There's a lot of literature out there on how people justify choices when it comes to paying or willingness to pay for something. But this is also something where we might be shooting ourselves in the foot a little bit, because we want all of our employers to maximize their access to federal tax benefits associated with commuting. And if we're giving all those employers this free pass, we're not enabling them to do the better thing associated with the available tax benefits.
Well, yeah, one thing too is for the employees that use that, you know, $2 a day isn't going to kill them.
Well, they're not making very much money.
And I think the challenge also is, but if you have if you're a server and you're making $2.13 an hour,
right?
Are you really going to take out pre-tax money? Because I've worked 5 years as a server and a bartender, never saw a damn paycheck out of it.
Right.
I made my money in tips. That $2.13 an hour I never saw. So
right.
I mean, there you struggle with that, because it's not like they're making even minimum wage. They're making this right. $2.13 an hour.
And that's a good
point. If you're going to start doing this tax, and then most restaurant people are small businesses, they don't understand how this works, they don't want to have to fill out the paperwork. So, I mean, I struggle with that, but I still think at the end of the day, like, you having taken that trolley several times as a commuter, you know, getting on the trolley off of the King Street Metro at peak time, every single person that was getting on that trolley was someone who lived in Old Town that was taking it home, and it meets our need of getting the cars off the road, too.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, we have all these different benefits that it provides us, and I can understand the cost issues, but I think kind of the larger context we got was that this isn't the silver bullet, and it's not the biggest burden on our budget.
It's $900,000, I think, but it's one of a few opportunities I think that could be explored. Transferring off of another bus, there's the free transfer option available. Transferring off of Metro, there's a discounted fare available. And if the fare is minimal to begin with, the overall impact, even for someone with a lower income stream, is probably going to be small. But again, there are a large percentage of non-visitors and I'll say non-employees working along the King Street corridor there that we can probably gain some benefit from, but I think it's something the city should at least explore.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's consider that. Now, one of the options is for the hotels. I don't know about the restaurants. The hotels, they could come up with that, you know, subsidy for the employees for the transit.
I don't know about other employers. That I mean, Old Town's full of other sort of more traditional employers that aren't the service sector, and those people are also accessing the corridor often by that route. So
if we have a lot of people that are, you know, working downtown, they get off and then they get on transit to go. Of course, we're talking about the Old Town folks.
Tim, one of the things that Stephen just brought up, which I think is a part of a greater conversation, it doesn't speak directly to what city manager has asked in this letter, but is part and parcel of the process we'll be doing at our retreat, is thinking about, you know, the next couple of years, not just this budget cycle. And there are some questions and conversations that need to be explored. You know, one such one is, you know, what is the pushback from the retail/hotel community if we do increase the hotel tax? What does that conversation look like? Where does that money go? What is it spent on?
Right.
Whether it's trolley, whether it's dash, whether it's, you know, something else that's going to benefit the tourism or hotel industry and help the city at the same time. We talk about enforcement. You know, what does that look like not only this year, but as we do create kind of the culture of responsibility, shall we say, on the roads? What does that enforcement budget look like, or pathway look like, or what have you? I think one of the things that it would be great to hear from the commission about at some point in time is kind of the longer look on a number of these things. We talk about what Commissioner Brown talked about in terms of capitalizing positions. You know, what are the specific opportunities there, and what are our limitations? I think greater emphasis on a number of those areas, I think, would be very helpful for not only council to know and fully understand, but also the general public when it comes to the budget. And then, as we talked about paving and some of the maintenance, some of those things, I think, have an ebb and flow to them. They're not, they don't have to be a stagnant level every year. As you do paving, hopefully there's some ebb and flow to that. And it'd be great to find out, it might not be paving, it might be a bad example, so I apologize, but if there are those places where you can slow down and then put more emphasis when it's especially needed, that would be great to know or find out. If those places don't exist, I think that's something that we need to know as well. But for example, if we were to slow paving down for a year and then double time it next year, what's the impact there? Not just in dollars, but in actual roadway and things like that. I don't know if that's what people I know have kind of ranted there.
It goes right back to your thing. If you cut it 1 year, then you have to increase it the next, which is harder, and then you get yourself.
It is, but
you know, buying like we did a few years ago when we had bad streets.
Right, but it's, I think the difference is, I would like to look at it from as a full plan, not just, hey, I'm cutting this year and then maybe I'll bring it back, but
exactly.
You know, when I'm cutting it this year for these reasons, but I know I have to bring it back. Because we can't bond a future council, but we can bond ourselves. You know, within the span of 3 years, how fast do you push over those 3 years can be dictated by that council year to year. Doesn't happen.
I agree with you.
To a certain point in 3 years, how fast do you go that every year you can dictate that. And I think those could be some places where if we as a community understand how quickly we'll go from year to year on something, maybe there's opportunity for savings, I don't know.
Yeah. So it sounds like we have the capital piece finalized with 2.2%. Is the group agreed that the complete streets is probably the next highest priority that we want to provide the city manager? Or is it perhaps another item that might take precedent?
Well, that was one suggestion. I hear enforcement was another. I mean, if we wanted to have a couple of priorities or maybe three, I mean, we could listen. Enforcement has been a complaint from, well, APD gets them all the time. But if you have better enforcement, you know,
less than interested in it.
Right.
Yeah. We've heard from APD, they're less than interested.
They don't like doing the work.
That's the problem. Yeah.
So, they don't like it.
So just to kind of go back to the exercise so it's clear, I think there are two pieces that we're looking for, sort of the overall guidance, which this is what you had last year.
Right.
So
right.
If there's anything on this that you want to take off, and it sounds like the answer is no, a lot of this is consistent with what you're looking at this year.
Right.
There's that piece, which is helpful, and we can provide a letter that outlines that. Then there's this other exercise that we've been talking about that's more specific to the general fund, and it sounds like what I'm hearing is maintenance is a very high priority. I've heard that from a few folks already, particularly sidewalks and transit, maintaining the transit service that we have. So it's not just the physical, but also the operations of transit. So that's what I've heard. And then number two, I feel like a couple of folks have mentioned complete streets and asphalt resurfacing, and that's tied to maintenance, but more specific. And then lower on the list, I think we're hearing maybe less of a priority would be the trolley. I mean, that's the only thing I've heard discussed as a lower priority, and I don't know if there's something else that you want to add to that.
Okay, well, let's go back up to the priorities again, since, you know, we're beating a dead horse here. Everybody agrees that 2.2, that should be number one. And the question is, do we add anything to the list? And the state of good repair for the infrastructure has been mentioned over and over. We could add that as number two. Discussion? Sounds good. So we'll have two high priorities there. Okay. So we'll list those as two high priorities. As far as the reductions, I like the idea of exploring what we can do with the trolley. You know, one of the suggestions is, you know, a dollar a ride, and then with the caveats that you know, there's subsidies available to businesses that can reimburse the employees, or we can, suggest to increase the hotel tax. I mean, you know, we can explore those. I mean, there's going to be pushback on either end.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to add to your last comment, like Councilor Chapman said, that since the tax is now shouldering 90% of the cost, then maybe we got to make it on. I mean, it's a little bit, but so that'd be something to consider, like you said. That's just very specific to that point.
So that might be a staff follow-up thing. Can staff just verify how much?
The actual percentage.
Yeah.
Yeah, what that...
And how much of a lift is it to make it 100%, and then what does that mean for the hotel tax, for the other things you're probably using it for?
Yeah, we can get back to you. But, I mean, we could put general guidance, and then that specific guidance, if we want to get more specific later, we can have that to you at the next meeting or before.
So if we had a dollar a ride on that, how much income would that be, ballpark? I don't know what the ridership is, but... You know, just give us a feel when they said, you know, how much cut can you take? And,
I would say the counterpoint to that is it's not a very long route, and you're going to add dwell time for people boarding and adding fare, mm-hmm. and then you're going to also have to buy fare boxes, which are about, you know, at least $10,000 a piece.
Well, that's something staff has to look at and say, is it economically...
This is an out-year recommendation.
Anyhow, that's our suggestions. We'll, you know, see what you bring back, and we can float those. Anybody else, as far as reductions, other than, you know, say, you know, gee, well, everything there seems kind of sacred. You know, it's like, you know, where you take the money.
It's just the point about the trolley. I just think about how I've used it, or I think people use it. It's like you said, it's a short route, mm-hmm. and it's not that I'm opposed to exploring the option. It's just I think sometimes people even get off and on just even a few blocks if they're like opportunistic about it, because it shortens the ride because you can't walk as far or something. So I do think it would really limit how many people. I think it could potentially limit ridership, but that's different than estimating how much it costs, how much you would get the revenue. Try to make those estimates, because if you're only going four blocks, you probably
there's
won't
pros
wait
and
for
cons
it.
To this.
You have to pay for
and
it.
And you have to look at it. When they say, "Yeah, what would you do?" I say, "Well, we'll look into it."
Because now it's like a hop on, hop off kind of situation,
and
that would change
and that's,
the way it's used.
I think for the tourists, I would bet 60-70% of them don't go all the way.
Right.
You know, they on and off. So you know, you have to look.
Mm-hmm. But I think establishments want that. I think they want tourists on and off so that they, you know, people. I know initially when the trolley was in existence, they were complaining about people zooming all the way down to the waterfront. So
we tax them. It's up to sales tax. For you know, so who's going to pay? That's the question. Okay, well,
monthly ridership is roughly 40,000 to 70,000 seasonally. I knew I had it. I could find it somewhere.
I was like, did you come up?
So, you know, there's how many dollars, but like you say, you'd probably lose some of that.
We have the operation,
And that counts people getting on and off every time, right?
It's separate ride.
Yeah, okay, so that
But
that
I think
long
term, it might be worthwhile exploring the capital cost of the fare collection. That is spread around with the other fare collection processes.
Well, a suggestion I came up with is to have a box there for just donations, a dollar, or just donations. And suggest a donation of a dollar or something like that. Tourists would think, oh, this is great.
Model to look at, again, because I think this is a longer term thought process, is the circulator routes, because the the Circulator does a mall route, targets tourists, they pay money to get on that bus. But it's simple. I think it is like a dollar fare or something like that. So they simplify it for the tourists, so it makes it easier for them to use it. And I don't know any more of the details really, but that might be a model for us to sort of explore and see how do they justify the rates that they charge, how do they make it prime it for tourism so that they don't restrict the opportunities for its usefulness, and does that translate to a model that we could apply in Old Town?
I believe the city of D.C. supplements that as well, but the idea of a circular, both free and with a minimal fee, particularly during certain hours of the day, usually the lunchtime hour is where they offer them in quite a few cities, it's proven to be successful. You know, here we have it running, we've extended hours at the dash delivery, service delivery end, earlier in the morning till much later at night. So it is really a substitute for a dash route. But if you're a tourist trying to take advantage of it, they would be probably more willing to pay a minimal fare. And someone who was transferring off a normal transportation route, they would just accept the fact that they're going to be paying, either transferring with no cost if it's doing from another bus, or accepting the minimal fare increase that it would be. Mm-hmm. Again, I think it's something worthwhile.
Do they play ads on the trolleys?
I'm sorry?
Like a digital display?
Yeah, they do. So they have a transportation.
No, I'm not sure what the revenue source is.
Very.
Another option we can consider is just charging them for the trolley at King Street, one-time charge. Because that would get the, you know, people there, and then the rest of the ride's free.
That would
people getting off of transit. Yeah, that'd take care of a lot of the commuters.
Well, how about this? How about I think we hear what you're saying, and we'll come back to you with
yes.
some more information. But
in
terms of your guidance, I think we would emphasize the need to explore this and provide more information, more of an exploratory exercise versus this is how it shall be. But
yeah, I think we've kind of kicked this around. Here.
And then maintenance being the other priority.
Yes, mm-hmm. definitely. Yeah.
Okay, any more?
Sure. Just to clarify, and I know Tim said we probably shouldn't do this as council members, but I definitely would love to hear a little bit more from this body about cuts. I mean, we're going to have to make cuts. And so I think what I am fearful of is council getting in a room making cuts on the budget, not in secret, but even in our meetings, making cuts to the transportation budget, and this body not have weighed in on what those cuts should be if we have to make them, since we probably will have to make them. I don't want to surprise you guys at the end of the budget season by saying, hey, we cut this, that, and the third, and because this body did not lay those out as pretty high priorities, whether they're not the highest priority, but they're pretty high on the phone poll, those things being, you know, having a possibility of some significant cuts coming to them, because I know there's going to have to be some cuts. And I don't know if we have time, you know, people can think it over to the next meeting or what have you, but there definitely needs to be some direction given to council.
No, you're exactly right, though, because it's better for us to make the decision.
Well, you guys are an advisory board, that's definitely won't
right. That's our job.
Our advice.
So on the capital side, you know, if we took cuts, we just have to delay some of the, you know, projects that we have on the operational side. I mean, there's nothing specific there. I just say on the operational side that we just take a percentage cut across the board. It's all important. There's nothing there that other than the trolley, that's a possibility that people have expressed we could probably do less of.
Well, if we need to provide it.
I guess I just wanted to make a request, because I don't think that in this docket packet or this PowerPoint I have enough information to provide a list. Like, I feel like we would want to look at line items to say, like,
that's what I was just talking about.
This is like okay. That list is way too broad for us to say, like, cut on that.
I think that this is the beginning of the process, so this is certainly not the last time we're going to come to you. I was just telling Councilman Chapman that every month there's, we're going to be coming to you about the budget likely, or every other month.
Right.
So that at that point, the council, or the, pardon me, the commission will be able to give guidance to the council or give, you know, letters of support for particular items.
Right.
And that's how we have proceeded in the past. So there'll be other opportunities. I think tonight it's just helpful for us for these items, for that exercise, so that we can get back to the city manager before he develops his proposed budget, which then has to go to the council. It's important for him to have these, some type of idea what the priorities are here. I think we've touched on, I think we understand that maintenance, state of good repair is the top priority, but the two that we haven't really touched on are the last two on that list, and I don't know if the commission wants to weigh in on that and kind of where those lie. And it sounds to me, because we haven't brought them up in terms of the signs and traffic signal,
right,
I don't know if that means that they are.
But even those are too broad. I mean, the problem is state of good repair applies to everything
right.
that the city maintains and installs. And so without, this list is too general.
Yeah.
And we know that the way that you budget is more specific than that. And there must be things where you're saying, this is what we would typically spend in a year to convert a streetlight over to something else, or to the stuff that you would do to change, improve, enhance, and then there's the stuff you would do to maintain and sustain. And I think if we had that level of detail, then we could help do our homework for you and highlight, like, these are probably enhancements that we can't afford to do this year or in the next 3 years or something like that.
So the subsidies are essentially maintaining the existing transit that we have today. So that transit subsidy is not any kind of enhancement. Where you are going to see enhancement is complete streets. That's new capital projects.
Right. Right.
The street resurfacing is, you could say it's a little bit of both. It provides enhancements, but it also maintains existing streets. The signs and traffic signal maintenance, that does include new traffic signals. And the bridge repair is maintenance. Mm-hmm.
So, if you could give us a further breakdown, I think is what we're asking here.
I would. So we're a little bit time limited in terms of, because we have, but what I would say is we don't have to weigh on this tonight and make a decision. I think what would probably, since we have till the 31st of October, you could provide, commissioners could provide their feedback, I would suggest, to the chair, because the chair is going to the meeting next Monday to talk with the director and other boards and chairs. Of TNES boards and commissions, and so that's another opportunity for you to relay the commission's views. So maybe what would be appropriate is to set a time by which folks can get their input to you, and then we could produce a written letter to the director from the commission that encompasses the feedback.
Do you want our feedback to be restricted to those items on the slide? Or
those are the items that that go into, yes, so this activity.
For this activity, yeah.
We'll have other, I know it's confusing, but we'll have other discussions about other pieces of the budget throughout the next 4 or 5 months. But for this activity, it's really focused on the general fund monies that are being spent on these items.
And you're looking for that at the end of the month? What I was going to suggest, but it seems like we don't have the time to do that, is much the same way we rank the capital projects in some order, and then we come and have a consensus summation of them. That would be ideal, but it sounds like we don't have that time element here.
Yeah.
Okay. So really, it's just these items is what you're looking at for feedback.
Okay, so my suggestion is, we don't actually have this. That slide.
Well, no, it's on the webpage, the commission webpage.
Okay.
Presentation.
So just give me feedback. Well, there's four items. Well, the subsidy is basically, you know,
maintaining
that's yeah, maintaining. But the last four, just give me one item that you said if there was a cut, I think that would probably be where it is. I mean, I'd like to have some feedback. Maybe you could. Yeah, if I make it two, that might be too broad. There's only four of them there. So if you just give me some feedback, then that way I'd have something. If you give me that by Sunday night, I'd have something for Monday meeting. Just we know what the priorities are. So as far as the priorities for the reductions. That would give me a general feeling, and then we'll get more detail on that later. Is that acceptable to everybody? Mm-hmm. I mean, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see what we're at. Good discussion. Good discussion. Okay. Anything else on the budget guidance? We've kind of beat that horse pretty good.
We've covered that
but
well.
Yeah, that was a good discussion though. Okay, other business. Just a couple things. You've probably read that. Vehicle crashes are up 10.6% in the first 6 months of 2016. So things aren't getting better out there. This also includes an increase in pedestrian deaths and cyclist deaths. So yeah, everything's going up. So these are our people that are getting hurt and dying out there too. So that's important. Okay. Any other business before we get to the vice chair issue? Okay. We have one nomination for vice chair. That's Steve is nominated for the vice chair. Do we have any other? Is there any other questions on the vice chair position? Okay, I guess my letter explained.
Are we allowed to buy him a beer for taking on the responsibility,
on
or is
nobody
that
bought me a beer?
A conflict of interest.
At my first meeting, I volunteered for vice chair. I didn't know what I was doing, but it was a good thing. So look at where I am now. Yeah. But okay, any other discussions on the responsibilities or anything? Okay, are there any other nominations? That's the same thing that happened to me. And I thought, well, how hard can it be? So,
move we'll to accept by acclamation?
Yes. All in favor of having Steve as the vice chair?
Aye. Aye.
Any nays?
I'll say thank you. Thank you.
I'll buy you a beer. I can use your help.
Anything you can do.
Okay.
No, I appreciate everyone.
Monday night.
Okay. That'll be my first challenge.
That's right. Okay, Carlson. All right, any other discussion? Good. No more issues? A suggestion to adjourn?
I'll call care of that one.
Second?
I'll second it.
Ah, adjourned. We're done. Thank you.
I got to go find out who to vote.
What time is it?
I'm going to go find out. How are you going to find out? Yeah.
Gary.
What new information will you receive?
Hey, Jan, the meeting Monday is it's 6, right?
It's much better.
And then here?